AAC meeting, Monday, November 7th, 2016.
Our concerns and questions were not addressed. Also, we can talk about the abilities ride and some closures of metro stations in PG County.
So, let's see, a couple of different places for those. Paul, you've got those under...
Actually, I'll cover those issues.
Hang on, let me go to the things first. So Denise will cover closed stations under the fare policy. Discussion, Paul, you can discuss the questions under the metro access piece.
Abilities ride, okay.
Right.
But Mr. Chairman, yes, to save some time, I mean, if you want to have a larger discussion, I think that's fine. But to answer Mr. Rush's questions directly, and maybe this will save some time at the end, the couple of things. The questions from all vendors was posted, and the answers to those questions, they were posted today. So they're on the website today. Okay. And the solicitation, and this was announced Friday, the deadline for proposals has been moved to November 29th.
Okay, that's new. Okay, very good. Good, thank you for that, Mr. Blank. Appreciate that. Denise didn't begin, so we'll cover the fare policy, the closing of stations under fare policy.
Yes, and okay. I talked to Mr. Blake, and I told him I was going to ask concern about when you call the Metro Access line, you don't get automatic voice. You just get pressed too. So I want to know why we can't be updated to safe or pressed too.
So let's discuss that under Metro Access, but that's a good suggestion.
Great.
Any other additions to the agenda? Charlie, did you have something?
Yes. I was at the bus and rail. We had a discussion of the need to fill a second vice chair with it. And not to advance my own political ambitions, but I have a theory. And then they said, we'll get an election at the AAC. So I'm just asking that we have the election at the AAC.
Very good. I think we even have that on the agenda, Charlie.
It is on the agenda, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And we're going to do the vote electronically. Brian was out, and so he'll be back this week, and so we'll have that information prepared. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Good. Charlie? Good. Thank you, Charlie. Are there additions to the agenda? Move that the agenda be accepted as amended. Thank you, Charlie. Any discussion? I don't think so. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed and those abstaining. Thank you. Okay. Review of minutes. Do I have any additions or corrections to the minutes? Do I have a motion to accept them as written?
Make a motion to accept them as written.
Thank you. Thank you, Marissa. Second? Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And those abstaining. Thank you. Review of board report. Do I have a motion to accept the board report as written?
No.
I didn't guess that. Go ahead, Bill.
I wonder if you wanted to put in a sentence or two about what happened with your meeting with the board executive committee. Particularly about the fair policy points, and remind them that they're going to double the fare of the metro access riders for anything that they do for bus and rail.
Okay.
So that was discussed at that meeting. That wasn't even last month. So.
Right. Okay. So the addition then would be that I think, as this committee has stated in the past, that our option would be not to raise the fares.
Right.
That any bus and rail combination would be twice that for metro access.
Yeah.
Okay, that's point number two.
What I would say is the impact would be twice metro access. It's not really twice the fare, it's just
twice. Right.
The amount of double trips. If they raise theirs, By 10 cents or if it's raised by...
By 20 cents, exactly. And the third, thank you, Phil, for clarifying that. And then the third option that I did raise, as we've raised in the past, is that we would appreciate going to a twice the bus fare as a calculation for calculating Metro Access trips.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we put those three things in, I think that that would cover what was said at the board executive meeting. So is that addition okay with everybody? Okay. Anything else, Phil?
No, I'm happy.
Okay. And any other additions, corrections, amendments to the board report? Okay. Thank you. All those in favor of accepting the board report as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Good. Those opposed? And those abstained. Okay, thank you very much for that. We are now at public comment period. Do we have members of the audience that would like to address the committee?
Yes,
yes
we do.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Wheaton. We have right now, is there Leo?
Hi, all. If the...
If the deadline has been extended for responses to the solicitation to November 29th, and questions... so the answers from the pre-bid conference have been posted online. I'm wondering if there is any addendum other than to the original RFP, other than simply extending the deadline. Did none of the questions create for staff the need to amend the solicitation itself? Because I thought I heard plenty that would have done that.
Mr. Wayne, I'm certainly not going
to
answer that one.
No, so just a quick update. There was a typo found on the price sheet, so that has been changed. But in terms of the general body of the document, no. What we used, instead of changing the document or the solicitation, we used the very good questions received, many of them, over 140 of them received, to help clarify for those prospective bidders as well as stakeholders to understand what we're trying to accomplish with this program.
So in the clarification piece, sir, I don't know if I'm helping or hurting here, was the RFP modified at all? Or tell me, how does the clarifications then affect what is in the RFP? Maybe that's a better way to ask it.
Well, and so as we're writing this and coming up with a new concept for us, at least, a new concept where previously, whenever someone thinks about doing business with Metro, they are, especially when it comes to transportation services, they are working for Metro. And the service is, in fact, a Metro service. Where in this case, what we're trying to do is leverage the existence of services already underway or soon to be underway to give Metro Access customers another alternative to Metro Access. So I think we use those questions, because a lot of the questions sounded as though people thought they were bidding on like a mini Metro Access contract or a Metro type service contract. And we had to use those questions to clearly clarify that this will not be a Metro service, but it's in fact their own services. So, but again, to specifically answer your question, Mr. Chairman, and Bill's question, no. The RFP, as you've seen, other than the price schedule, which had a typo on it, has not changed at this point.
Okay, very good. So we will certainly look at those questions. I assume that the answers to those questions will be easy to find on the site, right?
Yes, sir, but of course, as we're always willing to do, I'll ask Dr. B to send out a link to the page and you can make it easier for you to find.
Sometimes, thank you, sir. Sometimes my web skills are challenged. Thank you. Okay.
We can express the decision.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Pamela? Pamela, why?
Hello, everyone. My issue is with Metro Access. The problem that I'm having in the last 3 to 4 months, I have been getting late pickup, mainly on Friday, like maybe 2 and 3 hours late for them picking me up, not making my appointments on time. And I'm trying to find out what happened within the last 3 months that this has been going on. And I never had this problem before, and I think I've been driving Metro Access for the last 3-4 years, and it's like the last 4 months, they've been picking me up late.
Mr. Chair,
I'm Paul Stoneford, I'm the Metro Access Subcommittee Chairperson. We have Metro Access staff here who I see Ms. Anderson is writing down your concern, and I'm sure her or other staff will approach you to give more details and talk to you and to address it accordingly.
And in the past, Paul, when individuals have had difficulty hypothetically, and we put them and flagged some of their trips, sometimes I think we've seen improvement, so that might be an option we may want to look at here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Henn, did you want to?
I think Mr. Semelford handled things quite well.
I never argue with Paul.
Next person would be Leroy.
Yeah. Yeah, good evening. Yeah, I'm going to beat that same horse. But I had something to add. I wonder sometimes when you speak to the dispatchers, you ask them exactly where the driver's located or whatever, they'll tell you that they cannot give you that information on their whereabouts. I was wondering why that cannot be transparent. Why people can't tell you where these people are to see if you're there on the way to getting you. Because like I said, I have the issue of getting picked up 2 and 3 hours late myself, so I was just wondering why the dispatchers or supervisors can't reveal where the actual vehicle that at the time you request for your trip. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your concern. We do that want to hear from our Metro Access customers, and again, staff is here, and I'm sure they will approach you. We'll get more details and look at your trips and see how they can best results.
Do we have a generic answer on this one? What's the policy regarding the answer to this question?
I think Ms. Anderson is coming to table tonight to give a response.
Thank you. I think we're all getting used to the Uber Lyft type deal. We know
all right.
Your vehicle.
Sam's right.
Yes.
All right.
Good evening. Good evening, Mr. Young. Yes. That information really could change. So, for instance, if we are late picking you up, dispatch is trying to get a vehicle as quick as possible to your location to execute the pickup. And in doing so, we're trying to see the closest vehicle available to execute that pickup. So, say for instance, if you call in and we give you some information that may be valid at that time. It is possible if we find another vehicle that is closer to get you picked up quicker, that information could readily change. So we want to make sure as we're providing information that we're providing the most up-to-date and accurate information. But the bottom line is that we are trying to find the closest vehicle to be able to get you picked up timely.
All right, thank you for that. I just, I guess, without causing a fight here, real-time information is something that this committee has advocated for. So I can understand what the current policy is. It sure would be nice to be able to get real-time information on where a vehicle is and what the ETA might be. That does help. Something that this committee has been working on for a while and will continue to work on. Sir, Elmer, anybody else?
Yes, sir. We have the last person. Sandra, please.
What's someone's number you're buying? Sandra?
Sandra, on the back.
Okay. Yeah. Please bring you the mic.
Thank you. Good evening. I would just like to address a few situations that I've had on Metro Access. The one that was the most egregious was when I was being picked up from St. Paul's Church in D.C., going home, and I received the call that the vehicle was outside, so I'm going to look for it. And when I came out, my driver was in a screaming match with one of the church directors simply because he was taking up too many handicapped spots, and he would not leave the vehicle. He was very belligerent. When I came on the scene, he was belligerent to me as well. When I reached out to dispatch, they were not helpful. I finally ended up speaking with a manager, explained the situation, and said I was not comfortable riding with this vehicle, this driver, because at that point he had threatened both me and the church director. Finally, they said, okay, we're going to send a road supervisor, but they had no idea when that person would be there. So now, fast forward, it's about 12 midnight, and we are still at the church, waiting on a road supervisor. Then the road supervisor gets there, and he needs a statement. So, but he won't take dictation from me. I call the manager of dispatch, and he says, well, I've never encountered the situation, so I don't know what to do for you people. We had a situation where the being visually impaired, I can't write. So I was more than willing to dictate to the road soup or whomever, but that was unacceptable, and the dispatcher could not come up with Metro Access's policy on it and was totally belligerent about the whole thing. So I was able to improvise and come up with a statement. I submitted it, and now it's about 1 a.m. And keep in mind, this started at 8:30, okay? And I need to get up at 4 to go back to work. So now I have a grand total of 3 hours sleep, and I'm still not home yet. I finally submit the statement and never heard anything back, despite the fact that I filed a complaint. Haven't heard anything back, and it was just really egregious because I have encountered many situations in Metro Access, but never once have I had a driver to physically threaten me or to have a situation where I walk up on a case where a driver is threatening somebody simply because he's asking him to please don't not take up more than one parking spot. You know, there's that, and then there's situations where, despite the fact that I put in the correct address, I've been transported to the correct address, no problem. But coming back, they can't find the address, and literally dispatch said, oh well, you were on your own. And then when another situation is when I'm trying to call, and I try to be as specific as possible, indicating which entrance I need. The reservationists are refusing to accept that information. And I know that that's critical, especially for somebody who's blind, because the first thing that happens when they're not at the right entrance or exit is, well, Ms. Sermons, how come you didn't stipulate exit? Well, I did, but the reservationist is refusing to take it.
This is B. I'm going to ask all members to make sure they're speaking as close as they can and loud as they can within the mics. I only have a few mics that seems to be working at or operating properly, but then there are other mics, they're on, but they're extremely low. So we want to make sure that everyone is speaking as loud as they can and clearing the mics. Thank you.
Thank you, B.
Did you want to respond to that, Mr. Kent?
I'd be happy to do that.
And I'd like to have some follow-up also from Allison.
Absolutely. I would never presume to stop Allison Anderson from responding. But I did want to say to Ms. Sermons that it's certainly understandable how you feel about that situation. And we are sorry that you experienced that. Because unfortunately, one problem seemed to lead to another. The driver conduct issue is not something we hear as often as just a simple complaint of us being untimely. Most of the time we hear really kind comments from the committee and from customers about the drivers who, you know, do the best they can under some difficult circumstances. And, you know, while we can say that that anybody could have a bad day, it never needs to be so bad that they lose professional composure or speak to a customer in an inappropriate way or certainly make you feel unsafe. That's something we absolutely investigate immediately to make sure that, you know, that doesn't happen again, and obviously to get all of the facts. But, you know, the second aspect of it is that when an incident like this is occurring and you seek assistance from the call center, the empathy and urgency that you need from the call center also needs to be there. And since we have the leadership from all of the contractors here this evening, you know, I'm sure we can have further discussion with you about that separately from the meeting. But we just appreciate you bringing this forward because, you know, anything that we do in resolving your issue will undoubtedly help other customers as well. So thank you, Ms. Sermons, for letting us know. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir.
I just want to let know all the Metro Access customers that came tonight that we do have a separate subcommittee meeting every third Monday of the month, and you're welcome to come to the next one, which is on November 21st, and I'll bring your concerns.
Thank you, Paul. And also, back on this a little bit, just I appreciate you, Mr. Kent, discussing the safety concerns that were part of this whole discussion, which I think elevates it a little bit higher than just I ride and show up.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I understand. You understand that, so that's good. Thank you. And let's see, Doris, you are here, and I understand you have your hand raised.
Okay. I wanted to make this under public comment, Mr. Chair, because I think it's relevant in that area. It's not on the agenda. I wanted to request that WMATA, because headquarters is right here, check into the status of the curb ramps between here and the route of travel to the Judiciary Square Metro Station, directly on the other side of Fifth Street, at the when you cross to the building museum, there is a huge hole right at the edge of the curb ramp, and it's dangerous for people using chairs and other mobility devices, certainly, and it is also dangerous for people using a cane for orientation and mobility. Blind and vision impaired persons, there's also a great big hole in one or two of the bricks just before you approach. So it's dangerous. Somebody could get injured. I know it's not on your territory, but I think it would be relevant being the path of travel from a subway station. And so I wanted to just say that to the committee and the visitors, I'm Doris Rand, a member of the committee. And I also, if you've already done minutes, I'm hoping that I might be able to insert one editorial change that is relevant only to what I said to Mr. Evans, which was not that I lived in every region of the city, but rather that I lived in lived and or worked in every jurisdiction in the compact area.
Okay. We certainly can make that.
Okay, I've got it marked.
Right, thank you. We'll make that change, that amendment to the minutes. Good. Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, there is one more public comment.
Oh, please. I'm sorry. Thank you, Ellen.
Yes, sir. Ms. Carr, please.
Yeah. Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. While a lot of what I want to say echoes what previous people have already said about rides not showing up on time for Metro Access, rides dropping you off beyond your appointment time, rides taking hours, the scheduling of people does not make sense. When you're on the van and you have to pass your destination three times before they drop you off. Things like they're 10 minutes from your destination, but you've got to stay on another hour and a half before they come back to that point. Just this morning, I was on with somebody who they picked up in Springfield. They came to Fairfax, picked me up. Then they brought me to Southeast DC and then had to go take her to Reston. She was going to be in that van 3 hours. However, given all these complaints that you hear probably frequently, one of my biggest concerns is over the past 3 months, these things have been on an increase. And when you try to resolve it, whether it's you're calling, where's my ride, or you try to file a complaint, everything boils down to it's the customer's fault unless the customer can fight it and prove differently. The other day, my ride showed up 45 minutes beyond my window. I now could not get to my doctor's appointment on time. There was no way. It was now 10 o'clock and my appointment was 10 o'clock. So on with where's my ride? I gotta say, these agents use very polite voices. They don't get upset no matter if you're in tears or not. So they're polite, but it's all scripted. There's nothing I can do, and so on. So now I have to cancel my trip, and I get this lecture about how I'm canceling the trip with less than two hours notice, so please be aware this is a mark against you. I'm like, this is not my fault. Ma'am, that's the policy. Okay, fine. You can file a complaint. Okay, fine. Cancel my return trip. And again, I get the lecture. You're canceling your trip with less than 2 hours notice. This will be a mark against you. Okay. So I file a report. I'm told I don't have a valid case. I then get transferred. I talked to 7 people that day before I got those marks removed. But it comes down to, no matter what, it's the customer's fault. You're either not at the door, even if you are, and I'm blind, so I can't see that there's a van out there. But it's always the customer's fault. And I think that really needs to be addressed. And this thing somebody mentioned earlier, you know, when you call, where's my ride? It'll be, your ride will be there in 10 minutes. Well, after you've been standing there for an hour past your window, 10 minutes is not a valid answer. So I probably could go on much longer of all the different things I've experienced, but in the last 3 months, service has declined. And I've been a subscriber for about 20 years. We went through a bad period years ago, but this, it has deteriorated. And now it's the customer's fault. Thank you.
Thank you. Allison?
I mean, Mr. Kent will probably take this.
Okay. I think we need to do some follow-up here.
We agree, Mr. Chair. That's actually quite a bit to process. I think just simply having operational problems in the field is one thing. But again, like what the other customer had said, Sermons actually had said a little while ago, we exacerbate the situation by not rendering the kind of assistance and showing an appropriate empathy for a customer who's having a bad experience with us when they call the call center. I have debated at different times about how to answer questions like these at the committee because, you know, to the person who experienced this, nothing that we say is going to undo what happened. And I think it's more important to apologize and acknowledge the fact that that's not the kind of service that Metro Access was created to provide. We certainly don't condone it. And I think that, you know, with each complaint that comes in like this, where we're able to get specific information about when the call took place, I mean, one advantage of our technology-driven system is that we are able to go back and listen to the recordings of the conversations. So at least a customer who files a complaint with us can have some assurance that we're not going to say to you, well, you know, it's one person's word against another. We actually do have the ability to go back and listen to the tapes. And when we do, to put it mildly, there are definitely opportunities for retraining. But if there's anything egregious that we hear, you know, the management of the call center is at liberty to take, you know, further action if they need to. I'm not going to ask the contractor to come up and speak to this at this point because I think it would be more constructive for us to meet with you separately, Mr. Carr, and try to get some specifics from you, dates, times, and that sort of thing. And if you would be so kind as to speak with us separately, I'm going to send the managers over to you to get this information.
Thank you.
Can I just add another thing that...
I hear that, yes. That there have been so many incidences that at this point, for me, it's been 75% of my trips have had an issue. I don't have that kind of time to call in and file a complaint for each. I have requested to have my account looked at for the last 3 months. Whether that happens, I don't know. But a lot of times I'm told, you don't have a valid complaint, we're not going to file the complaint. So thank you.
So we can follow up on that.
We will absolutely do that as well. You know, and I think part of the purpose in our talking to Ms. Carr about this, if it has been a chronic situation, when we do sit down with a customer in this fashion, we're not going to just look at the one situation and not connect it to your total experience with Metro Access. We have all that information in our system, and it's a very easy thing for us to look up the history. And if we need to make changes in the way that we deliver service to you so that this doesn't happen again, we're absolutely willing to do that. I'm just sorry it took so long for us to get to this point, but we will also provide you with contact information so that if it does happen to you in the future, any problem with the service, we can get you the quickest response possible.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir. I need to move on. I'm running 20 minutes behind. We've got other things we need to cover on this agenda also. So let me go to Metro Access ID card conversion for conditionally eligible customers. Frank Roth. Tab, if we've got time at the end, let's pick up your question, okay?
And mine too.
And yours, George, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is briefed at one of the earlier subcommittees, and we've been asked to brief it again at the Committee of the Whole. As this committee is aware, Metro is currently in the process of creating a plan that will lock the emergency gates in an effort to address the issue of lost revenue as a result of the unauthorized access to the system. Excuse me. The committee and the disability community have expressed concerns regarding the impact that locking the gates will have for riders with disabilities who are conditionally eligible and utilize the free ride benefit for both Metro Bus and Metro Rail. In an effort to address this concern and also provide autonomous entry for conditionally eligible riders, the Department of Access Services partnered with WMATA's Office of the Treasury to develop a new Metro Access ID card for conditionally eligible customers and their PCAs that will provide the free ride benefit on a smart trip platform. The new ID card will allow conditionally eligible customers and their PCAs to utilize Metro Rail and Metro Bus for no charge. The card can be used throughout the system when riding on buses of the jurisdictional partners. The same benefits that are provided currently by the jurisdictions will be maintained with this ID card. For example, if a customer is currently able to flash their conditional Metro ID card, Metro Access ID card to ride for free, they will be able to utilize this new ID card as a smart trip card reporting the boarding and ride for free. Conditionally eligible customers who currently receive a reduced rate or no discount when riding with jurisdictional partners will continue to have the same fare, but will be able to add value to their new ID card to pay the fares that are not free. In addition, the card will also be available to use for parking. It should be noted that there will be no discount for parking when utilizing the SmartTrip card, and the cards will not come with preloaded value. The corresponding PCA card has been created and will be issued in conjunction with each conditionally eligible Metro Access SmartTrip ID card. The PCA card will allow whoever is traveling with the customer to access the system for the same fare as the ID card holder. When not traveling with the customer, or if the PCA card is used more than 90 seconds after the customer or at a different target, the PCA card will function as a full fare smart trip card. It is highly recommended that the conditionally eligible customer maintain the PCA card so that it is available to be used by whomever the customer would like to accompany it. If you look at the screen, we have images of the cards, but I will describe them here for those who can't see the screen. If you look at the screen, you will see the examples of the existing Metro ID card, Metro Access card, which is used as a flash card, and is shown to either the bus driver or the station manager to gain access to the system. And that card was just a white card. The new ID card is directly below it. We have utilized the same color scheme as the new WMATA buses with a gray background and a red, white, and blue swoosh across the bottom of the card. There is a Metro M and a SmartTrip logo at the top. Customer's photos on the left, name, ID, and expiration date is in the middle of the card. The card also states that at the bottom that the ID card is intended for the authorized user to board Metro Access, Metro Bus, and Metro Rail. It is property of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority and must be produced on demand by the WMATA personnel or transit police. The PCA card has an existing SmartTrip card background with the letters PCA in bold black printed along the left side. Cards are currently being produced and will be mailed out to all impacted conditionally eligible customers by the end of the year. Upon receipt of the new card, the white Metro Access card will no longer be valid for use in the system as a flash card. Following the mailing of the cards will be produced by the Office of Eligibility and mailed to the customers. The Office of Eligibility will also be registering the cards when they are sent. The card will deactivate if the customer is not recertified in accordance with the eligibility process policies at the time of renewal. The office will also be providing information on how to utilize their new card. We are in the process of creating and copying information in a number of accessible formats and also in Spanish that will be available to customers who request it. The initial card will be issued at no charge to the customers. Replacements will be issued through the Transit Accessibility Center. Customer ID cards that are lost will be charged a $10 fee for the first replacement and $25 for subsequent replacements. Cards that are stolen will be replaced at no charge with a copy of a police report documenting the theft of the cards, and they will be replaced free if they stop working or are damaged. PCA cards that are lost will cost $2 for the replacement, which is a standard fee for a smart card. Any balance on the card will be transferred at the time of replacement. Department of Access Services is looking forward to providing this opportunity to provide safe, reliable, and independent travel for our Metro Access customers who utilize bus and rail systems.
Thank you.
I'll take it.
Thank you, Frank. And I would say that I think this initiative answers some of the issues that we had, particularly with the emergency gates, and provides one of the areas that we had asked for, the step card. So I think this is a good thing going forward, something that the civilian community would ask for. So,
and just one more point. If for some reason the card doesn't work, because sometimes some larger cards don't, you can show it to the bus operator, or you can show it to the station man. They'll know it's they can check it on their MBOS machine, and then they can let you pass through, and then just let us know so we can replace it.
Thank you, Frank. Questions for Frank then? Go ahead, Elmer.
I see a few hands.
All right.
Larry, Paul, Bernice, Doris, and...
That's a few. That's a lot. Okay, let's go to Larry first. We'll go Larry. All right, Larry.
Okay, so just to be clear on the process, and when using Metrorail, the customer, the conditionally eligible customer, what tag is calling, the PCA has to go through the same gate within 90 seconds, correct?
That's correct, right.
Okay. Within the same carrier.
Within the same carrier, that's right, because the cards are going to be, they're kind of connected together.
Okay, just making sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Paul?
So to be clear, the old cards for conditionally eligible customers will no longer be in use. You have a fixed date in mind. You said the end of the year, so the customers are sort of aware when that will be communicated on the letter. It's the exact date, like January 1st of next year.
Right. When the customer gets the letter with their new card, the minute they get, it's like a credit card, the minute they get the new card, their white card is no longer valid. We anticipate that everybody should have the new cards by December 31st. So January 1st, the white cards will no longer be acceptable. We're having a contractor mail all these cards out, producing. There's about roughly 22,000 cards that we mailed out. If any of them get returned to us, they're going to come back to our office. So if there's about, we can put on to some great lengths to validate people's addresses. There are some addresses that we don't have. If folks don't have addresses for personal reasons, those will come back to us. The person can contact us, and we're going to maintain it. They can either give us an updated address, or they can come in and pick the cards up.
Thank you, Chef. Good. Thank you. Darnese?
My question follows Paul's. So I'm trying to find out when the gates will be locked. Is that the projected date for is January 1st, 2017, a projected that the gates will be locked at the Metro Rail
Center? I don't have information on that. That's coming out of another area. We just wanted to make sure that everybody that gets these cards before those gates get locked, and we anticipate that's going to happen. But as far as the days when they're going to officially lock the gate, I don't know that much.
The date has changed at times, so right now there is no official date just yet.
What is this?
This is a project where we talk with you all and give you an update that the equipment gate that's next to a station manager's kiosk that a lot of customers have a tendency to use. I remember time Elver said, I said, no, you too, okay. So those gates will eventually be locked, and you will use these cards that Mr. Roth is describing for independent entry and exit from the system, and no longer be needing the assistance of the station manager to either let you through the fare gate or, in some cases, open those equipment gates.
Okay. So, and then in case of an emergency in the system, and you're evacuating personnel, generally those gates are all open for everybody, right?
Right.
Under emergency situations.
Under emergency situations, the regular fare gates are all open, and on these gates, which is one reason we're taking a little more time, we're working on building a automatic release to those equipment gates that would work similar to what you see on the ferry gates.
All right, very, under emergency only under, conditions.
Under emergency.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you, Denise. I hadn't thought of that. Okay.
One more thing, Mr. Chairman. We've also tested, our staff got a few people that tested every single possible scenario with this card to make sure that they work with jurisdictional partners, the bus. We did about 2 months of really intense training, so everything that's advertised works.
Very good. Absolutely nothing can go wrong.
I'm not going to say that. Every scenario we can think of, we've taken care of.
Good way to phrase it, sir. We'll find a talking point for you. Doris, you're up next.
A couple of things. One is I think on this very point of nothing can go wrong that I would like to suggest there be a buffer time between people getting the cards, and so like a month or something so that people can test them out. Secondly, because I have a concern that because there's often a delay in the processing of recertifications and such, I'm concerned about the card being, this card being cut off, right? Yeah. So it deactivated. And then the other thing is with regard to the replacement charge, it seems to me, I have a concern that it's pretty steep, and for many people with disabilities, for example, intellectual disabilities, brain injury that affects memory and such, I'm very concerned that there might be lossage and it might be repeated, and charging people, particularly if they're fixed income, might be a difficulty. And then the last thing I want to say is for all of the riding public, especially people with disabilities who are riding fixed route on a regular basis, I'm really concerned about locking those gates. And I hear what you're saying about the emergency release and all that stuff, but I am very concerned that this might cause at some point a problem and a panic, and so please take that into consideration.
Thank you, Doris. Suzanne?
I just wanted to say I love this idea. And I've been chased down probably a half dozen times because I thought the station manager saw my card, but they didn't. And so they thought I was like jumping the gate. And I've just been mortified. So I'm so happy that you guys are doing that.
This is something that we've had in the works for a couple of years, lots of discussion. Great. So we're pleased to see this section. Good. Thank you. Albert, you're last.
Thank you. Central,
last central.
Oh. Thank you guys after me also. Thank you. I just want to say thank you much because this is one of the very much requests that we were asking a long time ago, not only about getting access through the ferry gates, not only about avoiding these distractions, the station managers are asking for assistance, but on the top of that, thank you, on the top of that, to get this kind of independence, because people with disabilities different ways. You know, when you are about to go in through the gate or the emergency gate, you have to rely on someone to do help you in one way or another. With these smart trip cards, metro access, you are helping to everyone to be a little bit more independent, to be treated as an other regular rider of metro. So thank you.
Thank you. Clarence, are you up next?
Sure.
Oh, sorry. Philip, were you next?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to be the fly in the ointment because I wasn't around when everyone.
almost begging you all to do this. My question is, now, is this thing going to start tracking us? For instance, you'll go, oh, Susie uses his card 4 times a day, that's $8 a day, times 30 days a month, $240 over a year, that's $3,000 we're losing. We need to start charging.
The answer is, I think, I mean, will it track?
Of course, it was going to not say, hey, we're going to start charging, but it will give us some data on something we can show, like, are people utilizing the free ride benefit? And then give us some data that we haven't had before, because we could never get actual data on people with disabilities using the fixed route system, which is important. Especially on rail, because a lot of people went through the emergency gate, they didn't show the station manager wasn't there. So we never had really solid data. We do on the bus, because every time you went on the bus driver pushed a button and we got it as a disabled fare. So now we'll be able to have some really good data on how well this program is working for people with disabilities. It gives us the information we need as far as our travel training program working. Are people opting to use the fixed route as much as they can over the paratransit? So there will be some data we'll be able to pull us.
Thank you, Frank. And also keep in mind that if the cost for taking paratransit is, what, $50 a ride, if you're using the fixed route service with the Metro app, this in the car, you're actually saving a lot of money, cost. So I think in the past we have successfully advocated for the free ride program, and I expect that to stay. As a matter of fact, one of the issues that might be a good fair policy issue to bring up, Phil. Carol?
Yeah, and my question is there some way in that car that's going to tell who's riding? Because if it is, that means you're tracking us individually. There's nothing that's going to show our name or anything. Am I correct?
So I know it's just like a standard smart trip card. We'll be able to see that it's the card itself is it's got a chip in it that's going to show when it's used. So we'll be able to tell, is it a full fare card or a half fare card or a just like the reduced fare card or a Metro Access card, or free card. We'll be able to see what fare is paying. I don't believe it's going to track them individually.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's see. I want to move on to.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Go ahead, Phil. Elmer, I think you're.
If it is like a truly smart trip card, but it's our track, the smart trip card, you have IDs and serial numbers, you register them with the main office so that in case you do lose it, they have the ability to give you back the money that's been lost on the card. So if it is like a real smart trip, it is very trackable. If people register it. Now, if people don't register it with the serial number that comes on it, then no. It isn't trackable, so that's up to the individual as to whether they want to put their name to that serial number.
I will say that if you don't want us to register, let us know you don't want your card registered, but bear in mind, if you have $300 on that card and you lose it, you've lost that $300, because unless it's registered with SmartTrip, we can't transfer that money over. There's no way to do that. It has to be registered.
If you have Metro Access right, you have the ability with the white card to ride for free. My problem is there anything in there would track me? Because that means that every time I get on the bus, you would know Carl and Valerie got on the bus. I don't want it to be tracked in no time, because if I can ride for free, then there shouldn't be no name attached to riding for free. You understand what I'm saying? If it's a smart trip that I got registered, you're tracking where I am and where I'm going. You understand me? Anybody else understand me here? Am I saying something that you understand?
We understand.
Okay. I don't want to be tracked Because if I want to ride the bus, I want to ride the bus. Everybody don't need to know that I'm riding the bus. Because if you're tracking me, then you will say everybody who has the same disability that Carolyn Miller. Am I talking in the wind?
Okay.
Everybody that has the same disability that Carla Bellamy has can ride the bus. That's not true. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
Just because you have one type of disability don't mean that everybody like me can ride the bus.
Okay.
That's not my theory.
Thank you, Carol. Okay, we have Elmer. I think you wanted to say something.
No, he was.
Go ahead. Hang on. We have. Okay. Wait, Ms. McKenzie, you're up next. And then Larry, do you want to speak? Doris, and then I've got a member of the audience, and then I need to move on. Go ahead.
I just want to make one statement. If you lock the, if the gate is going to be locked, I can't independently get through the turnstile. I need to have somebody's assistance. And most of the time, there's nobody in the kiosk, especially in the warm months. And so I'm basically stuck there. I generally have to ask a passenger or another member of the public to help me out. So basically, you know, this locking at the gate cuts off some freedoms.
So you're saying that you would have difficulty getting through the turnstile?
Can I respond to that?
Please help out here.
I don't have difficulty getting through the turnstile. As long as the card is rubbed against the reader, I just can't rub against the reader.
Right. And so, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, and while not necessarily focused specifically at the time on Mr. Mackett, on Edward, we are recognizing, and part of the policy is this plan and strategy is being rolled out, but it's already been accepted by our colleagues in rail as well as the police department, is a recognition that a reasonable accommodation will have to be made for some customers. If you know, I can use one customer, for example, Mr. Ryan, who has the service animal that follows his vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in these cases, the reasonable accommodation will be for station managers to still assist him and other customers who are in need of assistance with their service animals trying to go through the gates. So in a case where a customer with limited mobility, limited use of their limbs, and cannot use the fare gate independently, the station managers are supposed to be there to serve you in a reasonable accommodation of fashion at all times. One of the ideas, and I hear you, one of the ideas behind this idea, in addition to fare evasion, is the fact that we're trying to allow the station managers to be available for more service to all customers. So the station managers should be there. And I understand, I know the situations you've been through, but the idea is that the station managers are going to be there, and for any customer who has a disability and needs a reasonable accommodation, they will be assisted through the gates. That's the plan. So, and then, of course, as I've always said, if you ever find any shortcomings of Metro's policy when it comes to people with disabilities, you call my office, give me date, time, location, and then we get right on.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, sir. And I appreciate it. I just got a little bit of education here on reasonable accommodation when and why it would be needed. So I agree that there are certain circumstances that a reasonable accommodation needs to be given to individuals, and I appreciate the fact that that would be forthcoming. Let me go to, I think Doris, you're next. I've got Larry, Darnese, and then I really do need to, because otherwise we'll be going to 10 o'clock.
Okay, so first is with regard to the issue, thank you, Mr. Blake, for the accommodation. And the thing I think that has to be kept in mind is that it needs to be readily available accommodation, you know, so that it can. So I don't know what they're going to do about the staffing of the kiosk, but I certainly have seen kiosk managers not being available. So, and then the second thing is to Ms. Dalby's point. I would like to know if you have checked with WMATA's attorneys and or perhaps in an ADA attorney, and also particularly WMATA's attorney, about the issue of ensuring there's no tracking, because I think there is a constitutional issue regarding tracking people. This has to do with things that I have read about and heard about regarding the issue of putting chips, you know, on people's cars by the police and such. So I would suggest that you check into that issue of citizen privacy.
Larry, thank you. More education to the chair over here. And, Larry, you're next.
First of all, I want to convince you guys for actually doing this. It's something that increases independence, and it's something that just enhances the overall customer experience, and so that's a positive. With that, I think, and this is being from a transit agency where cars are registered and stuff like that, I think it's almost a catch-22. The positive in having a car registered is if you lose it, you can automatically get the money back. If you don't register it, you know, that could be money you lose if for some reason you lose your car. And I know that there are transit agencies nationwide that are doing similar things, as well as even tracking. There's an agency in Nevada that actually uses data to figure out how often people are using transit versus using paratransit. Not necessarily looking at person A is going from this place to this place, but more or less getting a general idea of how often people actually use public transit versus paratransit, which, if you look in the long run, is actually a positive to us, because the more that they see, hey, something like this is getting people to use the fixed route versus paratransit, it in itself shows its benefit. And so I think that's important to keep.
Thank you, Larry. And certainly there's freedom of choice, so understanding and appreciating Carolyn's arguments. I can see your point too, Carolyn. Darnese, and then we have a member of the public that wants to speak.
Okay. I have 2 points. Right now, I use a scooter, and I can tell you right now that the equipment gate is not made many, many times. And often if you have to use the outside elevator, you're using a scooter or a wheelchair, and you need to ask the station person a question, there's nobody there when you push the button, you know, for emergency service. So I'm very leery of that, and in the fact that elevators frequently break down a lot, and the current messaging system is not very efficient. You may be already at that station before you find out that elevator isn't working, things like that. So, and my concern is that I understand that Metro is going to be laying off, and if the station people aren't there now, I have deep concerns that something will happen to someone, you know, my population.
Thank you,
Dennis. And my other question is, or my other concern is, piggybacking on what Ms. Bellamy said. So I understand the need for data. If there's a way you can collect the data that the person is disabled riding,
rather than associating that person's name. Maybe just sticking to their number or whatever, so that you can separate, keep account of how many people use it without using the person's name.
Thank you, Denise. Okay. I was told the person from the public who wanted to speak is not here, so we'll move to the next agenda item. We have the Metrorail light color update from Mr. Blank. Mr. Blank, I'm running 25 minutes behind schedule. Can you help me out?
Yes, this should, well, let's put it this way, this should be very quick. But let's see. So real quick, as most of you go through our Metrorail stations and you see the platform edge lights, most of the platform edge lights are red. There's a few stations, they're the oldest stations, where the platform edge lights are white. Last month during the bus and rail subcommittee meeting, I brought this issue up in the, and I don't want to speak for the BRS, so I don't want to sound like leading the discussion, but the BRS voted overwhelmingly in support, or at least initial approval, let's put it that way. It gave initial approval to an idea that Metro, in an effort to make sure that the lights are always working, or at least to the greatest extent possible, we're moving now to having all of the lights be white throughout the entire system. White bulbs are easier for us to find, and in terms of replacement of bulbs, and from feedback from a lot of customers, they are actually more effective at warning you that you're near the platform edge than the red lights. So this was just a follow-up from the BRS that Metro would like your support and our intention to move forward with replacing all platform lights that are red with white bulbs.
So let me see if I can piggyback on that, actually I'm taking over Phil's job here. Phil, was there a motion that came from the BRS subcommittee to the full committee regarding this?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. I'm going to be Beyonce. She always holds it like that. Everybody's sound goes up. But yes, they did make a motion to that, and I gave them the history of when I looked into the wavelengths of red versus white light with the NIH, and they said that white was as good or better than red. And so we generally voted to pass on to approve this. So I would make a motion this evening, put something on the floor of discussion, that we approve the movement to all white lights.
I second it.
Good. Okay, discussion. Do we have any discussion?
Doris.
Thank you, Doris.
I just wanted to say thank you, Mr. Blake, because I want to let the committee know also that the platform edge lights are part of an equivalent facilitation agreement with the Federal Transit Administration when the red bumpy domes were put in. And the white lights were part of that system that was created, that was made part of that system because the white lights provided the contrast that FTA considered and agreed to as equivalent facilitation for the standard Americans with Disabilities Act accessibility guidelines and standards detectable warnings, which if you look at Amtrak stations and other subway systems use rubberized detectable domes that are yellow in color. And so the white lights were that equivalent facilitation, and it was the move of one particular general manager that was interested in the red lights and I guess some others, but this is going to back to the true equivalent facilitation, so I hope that we will adopt this strongly urging.
Thank you, Charlie. Very good. Any other discussion?
Okay.
Thank you, Charlie. All those in favor of approving the motion as given by Phil regarding the return to white lights on all platform edge signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Abstaining. All right, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's good. Thank you for that, Doris. I appreciate that also. Fair policy discussions and strategy for FY18. I'll bet Phil has a few things to say about this. Phil, I know you probably went to the budget meeting on Thursday. I think we've all heard some on that. Do you have any words of wisdom for us?
Yeah, this is informational. First of all, I would recommend that you not believe everything you read in the newspapers or you hear from elected officials. It's depressing some of the things I've heard and read because they were at the same meeting I attended, and they have the same written documents that I have. But basically, it's a process. And what has happened so far is there was initial budget presented, there was comments by the board, the GM came back and presented a revised budget last Thursday, and I'll tell you what was presented last Thursday. And rather than have a discussion, what the chairman of the Finance Committee, Mr. Goldman from Maryland, asked was that all of the board members submit their questions relevant to what they received in paper, which I emailed to everybody here, and I have tonight, and that those questions would be answered and adjustments would be made if they had to be made next month, which would be at the December meeting of the Finance Committee. So it's a work in process. The schedule that they have set up, just so that you have an idea of what the schedule is, they expect to put a docket together. And for those of you that are new, the docket is changes that are going to be made that would result in an increase in fares or reduction in service. And that has to go through a Title VI analysis to see if there's an undue impact in minority communities. We are a minority community. And also has to go through public hearings. And that's where we have to get in and get our final shot at addressing the issues that we feel are untenable. Now, before we get to that, sometimes it's easier to prevent something than to stop it once the train gets rolling. So let me tell you the things that were proposed in the initial budget. We can discuss those, and I've already spoken to our representative on the board, Mr. Dorsey, from Arlington, that all of you make an appointment or write to the member of the board who has appointed you to this committee to let them know what our thoughts are so they're aware of what's going on. Several of the board members already addressed the issue that we're all aware of, that whatever fare increases are put on bus and rail will have an impact on metro access because we're two times the fastest route. So anyway, that's the information I'm going to give you tonight. So they are proposing, and this is the general manager, that all base fares increase to at least $2. So that's $2 every time you step on a bus. That's $2 every time you step on the train. Now, for the trains, the peak rail fares are going to increase by 10 cents. They're proposing to increase them by 10 cents, such that the peak boarding charge increases from $2.15 to $2.25, and the maximum fare increase, this is for rail, from $5.90 to $6. So that increase that they're getting, 10 cents, would be a 20 cent increase if you were riding on Metro Access. The base bus fare minimum off-peak would increase by 25 cents to $2. Express bus fare would increase by 25 cents to $4.25. Then Metro Access fare structure would remain at twice the fastest comparable fixed route. The minimum fare would increase along with the base bus fare from $3.50 to $4. So the minimum fare on Metro Access would now be $4. Fortunately, the maximum is going to stay the same at $6.50. So to quote Denise, we're getting pregnant in the middle. The fares are all going up towards the middle. Now, one of the things that I would suggest that we think about is currently the fare calculator calculates the fastest route to give us our fare on Metro Access. Currently, with what is going on in SafeTrack, and one of the things that they did on Thursday at customer service was talk about the state of safety and the state of the condition of the system. And so we all know about SafeTrack, and we know what staff has done, which I think is commendable, and that is adjust the fare calculator to take into account when there are slowdowns due to SafeTrack, because they know a year in advance when that's going to happen. So they can calculate what's happening on the Red Line right now. They can calculate what happened on the Arnhem and Silver before. What they can't calculate is what's currently happening, which is there are off-peak track work, incredible amounts of it. This Sunday, this weekend, it was not noticed. I get all of the updates. I'm lined up for email of what track work is being done, what adjustments are going to be done. And I never got a notice of this, that Metro Center was going to be turned into a one-track system. So that when I got onto Metro Center on Sunday, one track was completely closed off because they were redoing the rails. And so not only was it single tracking, but both the trains going to New Carrollton and Largo were on the same side of the platform as the trains going to Vienna. And so, and unfortunately there weren't any staff people on the platform, so if you were blind, you didn't know where to go. And if there was a train coming in, you didn't know which direction it was coming because they were going in both directions at the same time on the platform. And that was bad, that was a safety issue of what happened this weekend, but also when it comes to calculating the fastest trip, that was an extra 24 minute wait for those trains. As I was leaving to come here this evening on rail, I did not book a ride on Star or on Metro Access in advance because I knew what the SafeTrack was going to do. Just as I was leaving the house, I got an alert that, oh, by the way, they're going to be single tracking again this evening. So there'd be a 24-minute wait for the Red Line and a 24-minute wait for the Orange, Blue, or Silver Line. Now, that's not in the fare calculator. And that's not the fault of the fare calculator. There's no way the fare calculator can know that because they're going to be changing these on a regular basis. And they have two new people that are very good, the new director of safety and the new director of track operations. They're both from the New York system, and they were there in the 90s when the New York system was in a similar situation as this one. Where there had to be those kind of shutdowns. So when we talk about the impact of the fare increase on bus and rail into calculating Metro Access, I think we need to discuss the fact that the fare calculator, as long as they're doing this SafeTrack and renovations, the fare calculator is not accurate. And one of the things we did several years ago before the fare calculator came into effect was the Accessibility Advisory Committee, with hearings from the public, thought that $4.50 might be a reasonable fare, flat fare, on Metro Access. Of course, we can't do flat fares because of the FTA formula. But currently, the average fare, according to the monthly reports that we get, is about $4.50. If we do twice the bus fare, it would be $4. And that's pretty close. And so one of the things that I think we might want to think of as a proposal by this group is that during the time of SafeTrack, during the time of rehabilitating the system, which is going on right now, that we go to a fixed fare of twice the bus, and that would be an option. The option, other option that would be to reduce our maximum fare from $6.50 down to $6, which might accommodate what's currently happening with the not quite accurate fares. The other one is to change the multiplier so that it takes into account what's going on. So those are three potential proposals not based on anything other than the accuracy of the fare calculator at this point, to get something that would be equivalent and fair. And they made the point, and they're absolutely right, everybody that uses the system has to pay to keep it up, including the jurisdictions, including Metro Access, including bus and rail passengers, because there is a financial problem. But those were the three that Patrick and I talked about and came up off the top of our head. And, you know, think about other ideas that you might have to throw together with our group so that we can say something appropriate before things move forward. On the positive side, let me point out, we talked about lighting, and I know everybody's worried about the lighting project and the capital project. And one of the things that they discussed was the capital budget, which moves along with the operational budget. And the capital budget is going to continue to proceed. The lighting project is going to proceed at its normal rate. The only thing that's going to slow things down is track access time. And that's something that they are going to be debating. There is a debate from the business community, from the District of Columbia, about giving them track access time. And that's something that is going to come forward at the hearings. But I can tell you from what happened in New York and from the people presented, even though there are some people that are being flamboyant about saying no fare increases and no change in operating hours, the reality of the system is they need the time. If you're interested, I can send anybody down the safety report. It's already posted online, and you can see the things they have to do to prevent the fires that are taking place, that are preventing the derailments that are taking place. And so follow what's posted online, not necessarily what you read in the newspapers. They're working on the project. It's not a six-month project in April. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. The New York system took between 5 and 10 years to get it back up to snuff. But that is happening. So basically, to give you a timetable now, what's going to happen for the next couple of months is they're going to get a reworked budget at next month's meeting. Then they will work on the docket in December. Hearings will take place in January and February, and the final budget should go out sometime in May when they're ready to go. So now is the time for you to meet or email or talk to you on the phone with your representative to the board and let them know what the problems are for the accessibility community and explain to them, you know, what needs to happen. But we also don't want a free ride. We want to participate. It's safety, accessibility, sustainability. And sustainability is important. Safety is important. Accessibility too. So that's pretty much what happened. And next month, I will come back and get you updated again as to where we are. And if anything breaks in between that, I will send emails out to everybody to try to keep you up to date on what's happening. So don't panic, but you've got a job. Talk to us. Also, vote tomorrow.
Thank you, Bill. So, a couple of things. Thank you, Bill. One thing, Bill, do you want to add this? Denise brought up the possibility of closing stations. Was that in?
Oh, yeah, let me put that up. That was in the first proposal that the GM presented last month, 2 months ago. That's off the table right now. What they're doing for bus routes and for stations, they were looking at the least used bus routes and stations, and also for the bus routes, how much they were paying to supplement those particular bus routes. I have a list of all the bus routes that are still on the table if anybody wants to look at them, but they won't be addressed until the next meeting and I can send you a final one. As far as the station closures, there was real strength amongst the board that they don't want to be in a downward death spiral. And closing stations, reducing station managers, reducing cleanliness, reducing lighting is something that is just a definite no-go.
Thank you, Bill. And there was also four proposals that we discussed last month, A, B, C, and D, that did have some reduced service capacity, particularly on the rail. And I think those are largely off the table, too. I think what you've heard now from Phil tonight is the basic proposals that are out there. Denise?
What I will tell you is the general manager and the safety people say they need an extra 40 hours a week, and they're going to get them somehow, some way.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is B. We are bumping up to our time, so in the essence of time, we're going to use the timer to make sure that we can meet the need of the meeting. Okay, Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, there's a meeting that was held today at 3 o'clock up in Marlboro. Can someone tell us, has the changing of the stations, is that definitely off the table? Because they had a meeting today at 3 o'clock. And with the general manager, Mr. Evans, board members.
Does anyone have any update on that? I hadn't heard of that.
No, I hadn't heard about that one either.
Okay.
Well, you know I'm here.
No, when they said closing the station, did they say closing it for repairs? Because, again, they're closing stations right now on the red one for repairs. Well, they're running buses, so.
I'm not sure, but it's closing stations in PG, so I don't know.
Was that on the agenda?
Today, no.
Today, at 3 o'clock?
I'm asking someone from Omaha because I want to know.
Do we have any updates on that? Thank you, please. Okay. All right. It looks like we have to do some investigations then. Let's see. Darnese?
No, Doris.
Oh, Doris. Go ahead, Doris.
I hope as we look at this whole docket that we consider taking a strong stand against cutting bus service. And particularly, I think it's really bogus to base it on what productivity routes have now, because if it's balanced out against the idea of adjusting the operating hours of the subway, then you need more bus service to keep people in the system, not less. And for people with disabilities riding that have to use buses to get to the subway, not just buses that are paralleling it, but buses that are to get to the subway, it's going to be a nightmare. So please let us also consider strong positions to keep and in fact enhance the bus service throughout the region. I really appreciate that the chair's report, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes, they are working with the jurisdictions.
They're working with the jurisdictions in those regions to see if jurisdictional routes can replace the ones that are going to be reduced or moved down.
No, and that's really, really problematic because, for example, some of the regional bus service that goes through Arlington and into Fairfax County and links with other bus service, because some of that bus service used to go all the way, for example, from Arlington to Fair Oaks, but is now split up into three buses. They're talking about, for example, the bus right where I live being taken over by Arlington, but I'm right at the Arlington border on the other side. And I think you need to look at what some of those long lines needed to be, which is regional service, in light of any adjustments to the subway system. If you look at the way the service was before the subway system was finished, at least the basic subway system was finished, it accommodated all that and got people where they needed to go. And if we have to go back to that in order to adjust for the maintenance, then we ought to have increased bus service.
Thank you.
And then jurisdictions won't do it. I'm going to sum that up.
Any other comments? Thank you, Phil, for that report. Let's get our ideas into Phil. He has sent out a lot of good information, which is very good background information.
Mr. Chair?
The committee already has positions on twice the bus fare, which will be communicated, I think, in email. Nee, go ahead.
Uh-huh. You had one comment from the public?
Quickly, we can take that.
Very quickly. Ramada certainly needs a lot of work, and it needs more funding. I'm not convinced, as Phil is, that any of the proposals that have been floated over the course of the last several weeks and month is off the table. Various elements here are proposing to reduce service, close stations. They've already on record as wanting to privatize and outsource, and yet folks here want to raise the fare. That's a little nuts, if you ask me. The Council of Governments and the Board of Trade are trying to encourage a consensus around a regional sales tax, which is not the worst idea in the world, but it's also not the best idea. I would think, as Phil suggests, the committee members speak to their various board members, we should be encouraging and demanding a regional property tax. It's the property owners in the entirety of the transit zone, all of the counties and the state of Maryland, the state of Virginia, and the District of Columbia that have benefited tremendously for even our deteriorating system, and they should be the ones to fund a rebuilding and revitalization of WMATA.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Okay, I want to jump next, if I can, to administrative items B.
Yes, Mr. Chair, before you jump, I just want to follow back up on the piece Denise was just asking. It appears that the Prince George's County Council did meet with Metro today. It was Metro's GM, along with Mr. Augustine, who is one of the alternate board members.
Yeah, he's board rep from PG County.
Okay, they met with the county today.
Okay.
So I think that's what Ms. Rush was speaking about.
Thank you, B. Do we have any idea, or was there any recording, or can we...
I'd have to follow up on that. This is from PG County's website, so I'd have to follow up on that information, and we'll provide it to the committee via email.
Great. That's perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Dee, and thank you, Denise. Go ahead, Phil.
Mr. Rush should contact Mr. Augustine directly. He's a delightful person to talk to. He's on our side. He's very supportive to everything that we have needed, so I would suggest Denise just give him a call.
Yep. Okay. Thank you, Phil. We just wanted to quickly talk about the Richard W. Hettinger Award. By overwhelming response, the AAC has nominated Antonio Stevens, former ADA Ombudsman, for this year's award. The Accessibility Excellence Award Ceremony will be held on November 16th. It is generally in this room. Unfortunately, I don't have a time for that one at this moment, but we'll ensure that everyone actually gets an invitation to the event. Any questions?
Thank you, Bee. It's never been around 5:30, right?
Oh, and invitations have already gone out. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's the newsletter.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's something separate. Generally, we do a separate invitation that comes with this.
Well, I got sent RSVP.
So the newsletter is actually going to be the invitation?
I don't know.
Oh, that comes from Frank. Okay, very well. All right, very good. That's it. Can I ask him?
Is that it, Bee?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you for that. Go ahead, quickly, Doris.
Yeah. Hi. I was just wondering if you know who is getting the excellent award.
Who's
having an excellent award? Who is it?
Are you speaking of the Rosalind Simon?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So this year, the Rosalind Simon Award will be given to Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth from Illinois.
Oh, yeah, hey, good. Right, she did some, she was at the Department of Veterans Affairs. It would be great to see her.
Correct.
Wonderful. Beautiful. That's great. That's great. I missed Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Thank you. Yours. Okay.
Our report is next.
It is.
Everything else going in between.
Can hardly wait, Paul. Take
okay.
it away, Paul.
So in lieu of my wonderful report and all these other sub-agenda items that were given to me, so graciously, the only thing I have is I see next month on my agenda is talking about the Metro Access trip insertions and the OCC customer service annual update. Just would like to find out who will be presenting those wonderful pieces for Metro Access staff. I'm sure Ms. Anderson will provide that, of course, okay. Let us know.
For both those presentations, we will have the team from MV Transportation presenting on both those points.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's all I need to know. Going next, I sent out with the direction of the ACC, the AAC, I'm sorry, the questions about abilities rights procurement. And once all that thing went out, we wanted to find out as a committee when we'll receive a response.
We were already told it went out this evening.
The response was given to us, Mr. Blake, who said
posted
on the website today.
Yeah, answers, the way we do it is you submitted about 10 questions. I'm just kidding. 10, 12.
Almost 20 questions.
Oh, 20, okay. And other individuals and companies submitted. So there were a total of 145 questions altogether. The answers to all of the questions are on the website.
Oh.
So they're answered all as one big group of questions.
That's right. And then
there might be a few duplicates, yeah. But you should be able to recognize, I was required to take away the identification of who gave the questions, but you should be able to recognize your questions because the questions are for me.
Where are they on the website?
Okay, just you go homepage, the Wamata homepage, you scroll to the bottom, and there's a link called Doing Business with Metro. And then underneath that, there is current procurement, and then there's the abilities ride. But what I'm going to ask Dr. B to do tomorrow is send out a link to
thank
take
you.
Each of you right to.
All right, thank you.
And the RFP will go out again?
The 29th. No, the
29th of November, right?
The responses to the RFP
are due on the 29th.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, so Denise, I'll go to the last one. You have a few questions about ability rights, but first, a quick summary. Three of us did the safety exercise at Southern Avenue, and just to give some feedback, both Pat and Larry, what are big takeaways do you want to share in terms of lessons learned?
Larry.
This is from the safety exercise. Me, Pat, and Larry did yesterday.
Thank
you. You
want to be the safety exercise. We discussed about talking about this. So, Larry, make sure
brief, please.
Training, period. I can sum it up in one word, and that's what I would always say, training. I think, you know, overall, I can talk about my experience, and you know, for the most part, the first responders actually did a better job, a decent job at least saying that they were first responders. But in terms of how to deal with people with disabilities, I feel like the training is still, to some degree, that unmet needs.
From what I observed yesterday, it was a lot better, but there are points of miscommunication, at least from what I heard from the radios between Wamata staff and the first responders, because it took them quite a while to actually get the tracks in. Since they simulated with smoke, given the fact it took, I would say, probably give approximately time, 30 more minutes for them to get there, when if this was for real, people would be probably really concerned, let's just say, about the time they get there to get the people and get them out safely. The way with both Pat and Larry, they kind of saw they were visually impaired, but kind of asked volunteers to lead them out where I think we talked with, where it's they should be leaving them out if it was an emergency, not appoint someone, especially when you have that type of emergency situation. The people you get as volunteers, they may not want to do it. So that's a concern.
And I would say, Paul, to add on to that, a couple of things. One, this track bed to walk along was much, much, much more difficult than the track beds that I've walked along in the past with lots of obstacles in the track bed, cross tracks going over the track bed. I was pretty tired by the time I got home. I got to tell you that. Walking on the catwalk along part of the way would not afford me, of course, if I had a service animal to walk with that service animal. So that would have been very difficult to do. So when the emergency personnel said, are you mobile, can you walk? You have to take into consideration, someone has to take into consideration, perhaps, what that station looks like. And it might be an interesting idea to have a mobility instructor along some of those routes, so that as a blind person, you would have a trained, certified phone-in instructor who could give feedback to the first responders as to how, you know, what to look for and what to think about when they're describing the environment a person might have to walk into. Secondly, when I was in the car, the individual, the station operator, the train operator, never identified herself to Larry and I. She just kept marching up and down the aisle saying this and that and the other. We had no idea who she was. That was something that can be easily corrected. But the first responders did identify themselves. That was very good. But I think the most egregious thing here that I saw, and if Brianna was here, she would agree, I didn't see any way in which either the train operator or the first responders were going to talk to or discuss or tell to a deaf person what was going on. All the instructions were oral. There was nothing that a deaf person would be able to understand going forward. Now, there wasn't, I don't think, a deaf person simulated on the train or in that environment. So I think that would be an important population for us to be able to reach out to, so that first responders can get this information. And then lastly, I would say that figuring out who is responsible for what within the exercise is important. I think when first responders come on board, that they take charge. So the protocol of what to do, how to do it, when to do it, is done by the first responders. And I think they take precedence over a lot of personnel. That would be something that I would want to check out with Larry and I, myself and Paul, those are the things, the questions that we had coming out of the exercise.
Yeah, and the last piece is in the station itself. Some did a good job, but some people, there were like obstacles that we concerned about for people with mobility impairments. They had to pass through to get to the safety exercise, and I kind of had to ask to use the elevator to go down because they present the stairs for everyone. And for some people, that's not an option. So. That is it on that piece. And Denise, did you have a few quick questions about ability rides? That's what we can have on that list.
I haven't seen the questions the answers to the questions, but I'm just not understanding fully that this program being presented to ability rides for sustainability. It is definitely not an ADA. Well, it's not an ADA program, number one. Where is the money for the $15 coming from? And if a Metro Access trip is, say, I hear about a $52, and the customer is going to pay $5, they're going to pay $15. And the customer pays anything over that, if you're subtracting $15 from $52, that $37, where? I'm just not understanding the program. It's coming out of the customer's pocket?
Yes.
No. I don't know.
Let me just clarify real quick, because the first question, you said, where's the $15 coming from? Well, it's coming from Metro's operating budget, the budget that we use to pay for the trips that today were brought. Anyone who came in on Metro Access today, mm-hmm. Our operating budget pays for those trips.
Okay.
And the cost of those trips is built based on the requirements of managing and operating a paratransit service.
Okay.
So but Okay.
So how much does, so today I'm using $52 to come here, but if I use the ability drive,
let's clarify a couple of things. So with ability drive, so I wouldn't say you're using 52.
Well, I'm just saying.
You have to understand how we're budgeting overall.
Okay.
So, but yeah, you're not using 52. Now, the other piece is the ability drive program is beginning in Maryland. Trips that begin and end in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Customers will make that decision based on economics rather than using. The way the program is designed, we looked at a lot of trips people use Metro Access for, and we found a pattern in terms of the distance people are using Metro Access to travel. When combined with our 15, and generally the trips, that would be your minimum is 350, your maximum is 650. We made a flat fare, a front flat fare of $5 for every trip the customer pays. When you combine that with the money Metro is going to pay, we believe that's going to cover a lot of the trips if the customers choose to use this program instead of Metro Access.
Okay, but everybody who was on the Metro Access service, they went through approval and they have a disability and they have a need for assistance. And now you are presenting a program that does not accommodate people who need assistance. That's what I'm not understanding. I want somebody at this table, so the committee, to make me understand that.
Okay. Well, and let me just say one other thing. You look at the Transport DC program. Everybody who's using Transport DC is a Metro Access customer.
Mm-hmm.
And the rides on Transport DC have just exploded. So the drivers...
Now they have a place to... Do they have a place to call?
That's, what do you mean, do they have a place to call?
Do they have a call center?
Well, that program, yes.
Well, so you can't compare apples to oranges.
No. We're talking about assistance. You're talking about people needing Metro Access because they need assistance.
Well, that's part of the assistance that they need.
It looks like we're debating parts of what the RFP is going to be covering when they come out with the bids. So part of one of the things that we've asked for is going to be access to the ability to ride through smart devices, smartphones, and then also the ability to have a telephone access for those who don't have smartphones.
Okay, Pat, you and I were on the phone with someone at Steptoe. They were attempting to give me a smartphone, and when you dial Metro Access number, it is not voice activated. It says press 2 if you're waiting for a ride. Press 1. So will Metro Access be updating their system so I won't have to press 1 or 2? I can say 1 or 2. It's not voice activated. Is that going to be updated?
That's one question, and that's a good question. So for those people that can voice activate that, that's a very good question. The other part of that answer is that you can actually set up a smartphone so that it can automatically press 2 for you. So, but that involves a little bit of setup.
Yeah. Well, if you don't have a smartphone.
If you don't have a smartphone,
and
yes.
Everybody that's working at Steptoe with it will give them a phone to help them call Metro Access. Those people need assistance. And if you are blind and they just leave you at the curb, could be the wrong address. You go out there to the curb, it's just too many ifs with people who have disabilities. I'm trying to understand why WMATA is offering that program for the people who are disabled. I want a committee member, not Mr. Blake, I want a committee member to call me tomorrow, call me tonight, and help me understand. Please.
I can call you probably tomorrow.
I'll talk to you next.
Oh, okay, somebody else. Okay. And I think really the question, the answer to the question, is that for a large number of people, it will be helpful.
Okay. If people have to say, if you all understand it, I'm just listening. Happen?
I didn't, I'm following you, just honestly.
Okay. I follow.
Well, could you explain, are you talking about metro access versus the ability right, or what?
Well, metro access is presenting ability drive right. to handicapped people.
Right. But they're not getting the same services, that's for sure.
No, you're not going to get the same services. Right. So, do you understand what they're offering that?
To some extent, yes. What Mr. Blake told me, yes, I did.
I know what you said. I understand. Basically, the service that they offer, the same day service, for one thing.
Yes, that's one advantage, yes.
It's within the city limits, I mean, within the state and in Maryland. Without, you know, going well. And the other thing is that even though it's offered to specifically metro access customers, it does not appear to be a cross disability free opportunity, your equal opportunity solicitation. That's what I get out of it.
And Denise, I think Denise, your question regarding the fact that metro access subsidy is being used for the rides on a system that will not be fully ADA paratransit accessible is an apt question. I do believe just saying, well, that it'll be same day service, so it goes beyond and it's supplemental. And everybody else can just, you know, if you can't get that assistance that you need, that's the very assistance that you need. This is what I hear you're saying. It's the very assistance that you need that is the purpose for your using metro access.
Thank you.
So, and so consequently, it's really not equivalent. So why is what I hear if you say it, so why is the subsidy for metro access users being used?
Thank you.
Larry, I'm going to go to Larry, and then I need to go to Bus Rail because we have to have elections for the vice chairs. No, we full committee needs to make the vote. Go ahead, Larry, quickly.
I'm going to actually defer my question.
Okay. Okay, let me move quickly to metro access. We've got some time, we can go back.
Let's see, Bus Rail.
I'm sorry, Bus Rail. Let's see.
Mr. Chair, this is me.
Thank you, me.
Bus Rail elections are going to occur electronically.
Oh, that's right.
Right. We had a lot of things that came out to the committee electronically during this week, so we wanted to make sure everyone saw everything. And so this will go out electronically this evening and give members a full week to be able to pronounce it. They'll be able to do that by Friday. So we'll do that and be prepared for next week.
Thank you. I had forgotten that was the case. Charlie, you have to wait in suspense. Good. Okay. I think I have a couple more minutes then to go back to this discussion. Also, Tap and Doris, you had said something earlier.
I think it's too late for us.
Okay. Do we have any other parts? Because Denise did bring up a good point.
Yes.
Charlie.
I just want to say, to some extent,
where's the mic?
I'm trying to.
It's on. There you go. And I said the working. Okay. There. Now, all I want to say is that we're having a discussion to some extent we cannot control the outcome of because we don't know what the outcome is going to be. And nobody can tell us what it's going to be because they're prohibited from doing that. So in a large measure, it's a moot point.
What I want to point out, though, is that the extent to which this abilities drive takes the burden off of Metro Access, it creates opportunities within Metro Access to improve that service to become much more what people want it to be. So from my perspective, yeah, I mean, there are going to be some problems with it, and I'm going to try and use it, that's for sure. But if I can't, I damn well expect that Metro Access will be a hell of a lot better. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Larry?
So, the positive is that by the time Metro does this, there would have already been a precedent for how TNC's transit network companies have worked with transit agencies to provide the service. I know for a fact that Uber and Lyft are doing it up north in Boston. I also know for a fact that they actually have accessible vehicles. So people with disabilities who want to have a same day trip can request a trip just as an ambulatory person has the ability.
And Larry, isn't the formula up in Massachusetts the same? The individual pays fines, the transit property pays fines?
I think it's going to be similar. I mean,
I haven't read it. I believe it is.
Yeah, I haven't read Lamada's.
But Massachusetts has the same model, I think, of five.
Yeah, it's
upfront.
You pay like a flat fee, $3 to $5, and that gives you up to a ride totally maybe $15. And anything you pay after $15, you pay in addition to the $5. So let's say you had a trip that was $18, and you paid $5. You would pay $8 because you had $3 extra that you went over to $15 that you were allowed.
Right. So what you're saying, Larry, is that the model that's being proposed has actually been in use up in Massachusetts for a while now.
Again, not having read Lamada's proposal, it sounds similar, yeah.
Okay, good. Read the proposal.
I need to.
130 pages. Okay, let's see, I think we're at 7:31. Mm-hmm. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion.
Thank you, sir. Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you, committee.